Let me begin on this celebration of Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday by examining a new analysis of the economic state of Black America. I'm speaking with Mazahir Ali, who is the co-author of The State of the Dream, 2011, Austerity for Whom?, a new report published by United for a Fair Economy that examines the effects conservative fiscal policies have had upon African Americans, Latinos, and other groups that have suffered disproportionately from the economic downturn. Thank you for joining us today on Background Briefing, Mazahir Ali.
Yeah, hi. How are you, Ian?
Thanks. Very well, thanks. Now, in terms of course, your title, The State of the Dream, 2011, Austerity for Whom?, certainly it refers to Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday we're celebrating here today. So give us the bad news.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be bad news, but...
Well, it sounds like it is, though. I mean...
It's hopefully a wake-up call. Hopefully it's a wake-up call. The reason we put this report out is because right now we're hearing the roar of this new wave of elected officials that were just voted into office at the federal, state, and local levels. And a lot of what we're hearing is the need to reduce the deficit, the need to cut taxes and shrink government, cut social safety nets. And the reason we put this report out is to talk about the impact of such an agenda on our communities and our communities of color in particular.
So how does this relate to the political changes in this country? You're responding to a recent change where the right wing had a lot of victories in the last election, and we can analyze them. A lot of people think it had a lot to do with the Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance. But at the end of the day, what seemed to happen in the last midterm elections were a lot of angry white people voted and not enough progressives and minorities voted. So is this the basic reality that we have now?
Well, I think to speculate about what led to all these victories, I mean, certainly the conservative wing of our national politics gained a lot of momentum, and that's something that's been building ever since Obama was elected into office. But we can't really point our fingers at this election cycle and say, okay, well, this is cause for all the bad news, because really the circumstances that we're in right now, particularly for people of color, is something that's been building for decades and decades and decades.
Well, it's actually, I think you could argue that minorities, particularly African Americans, have had to fight their way back or the way out of enormous political, social, and economic disadvantage.
Absolutely, and they continue to fight. I think one of the things that we highlight in the report was progress made by people of color, by black workers, black families in two distinct periods. One being from the 40s to the 70s, and we're talking about one of the largest economic expansions in U.S. history, versus the gains made in the last 30-some-odd-year period. And what we found is that in that post-World War II period, even though that expansion was driven by a lot of racially exclusive policies, things that prevented black folk from being able to take advantage of the same government benefits as white folk, even though that was the case, we found that communities of color were making greater progress in that post-World War II period than they have in the last 30-some-odd years.
I was just trying again, Mazahir Ali, the co-author of United for a Fair Economy's new report, State of the Dream, 2011, Austerity for Whom?, I was trying to sort of track the political changes in this country on the basis that we have a kind of winner-take-all government, and now I think it should be blatantly obvious to most people who are paying attention, particularly with the compromise that the president had to make in order to continue unemployment benefits for the record number of people out of work. He had to swallow the idea that the billionaires in this country need tax breaks continued and their estate taxes cut, all of which happened because the Republican Party made that their bottom line and they wouldn't budge. So we know what their priorities are. What troubles me is it's everybody at the lower end of the economic food chain in this country is getting an incredibly bad deal. And I'm trying to understand the relationship between that and political action, because the real political action seems to be on the far right with these Tea Partiers, these angry Tea Partiers, who are getting their way.
Yeah, I'd say so. Certainly with the tax deal that was passed in December 2010, that was advanced by President Obama with, you know, largely GOP support. But, you know, I think something that you mentioned earlier, that we've got this kind of winner-take-all political arena, and that's something that I think is also apparent in just in that's been kind of the dominant narrative for, you know, 30, 40 years here in the United States of America. And I think that's something that we need to change, that this kind of crab mentality, and we need to shift to a focus that's a little more concerned with the collective well-being of our country. Because over the last 30, 40 years, the rise of trickle-down economics and this kind of bootstrap sentiment about people holding themselves accountable for either their success or their plight, that's something that has led to historic levels of economic inequality in this country. And I mean general economic inequality, but to a very large extent, racial economic inequality. Part of that narrative has been to attack government, to attack government workers. And the reason that this is particularly bad for people of color, is for black folk in particular, is because black workers are 30% more likely than the general workforce to be working in the federal government. And on top of that, people of color in general have a disproportionate reliance on the services of government, especially the safety net program. So when we talk about an austerity agenda, you know, reducing the deficit, cutting government public programs, if that's shared across the board, then that's obviously going to have a disproportionate impact on people of color who, as you mentioned earlier, are dealing with both historic and contemporary barriers to upward economic mobility.
Well, of course, Mazhar Ali, the co-author of United for a Fair Economy's new report, State of the Dream 2011, Austerity for Whom, this whole business of the rediscovery or the discovery of deficits has captured the narrative. Everybody is talking about austerity, Republican and Democratic governors and mayors in particular. And, of course, a lot of the agenda on the Hill now with the new Congress is seem to be targeted at Social Security, which, of course, is one of the few programs in the government that actually has a surplus. I mean, you got to admit that the broader debate is insane, let alone the disadvantage to racial minorities in this country. I'm curious, though, about the legacy of racism. Now, I don't know whether it's a good example, but I know for the longest time the Republicans in the Congress have been thwarting a bill in the agricultural, come out of the ag committees, for reparations for all the black farmers who got conned out of their land in Georgia and in the South. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Oh, there's a huge reparation settlement that's been voted on, but they can't get this money out. I mean, it's one of those things where a ton of money is waiting in terms of reparations. The facts have all been adjudicated, but the disbursement of the money is being held up. Are there any examples in your report of, or can you give us a sense of the legacy of racism in terms of economic disadvantage?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as I mentioned, this is something that's been building for decades. Government policies like the Homestead Act, which afforded settlers land and the opportunity to kind of develop some economic stability for themselves and their families, that wasn't something that was afforded to black folk in early America. Moving on, things like the GI Bill, which gave veterans the opportunity to obtain a higher education, that also gave people the opportunity to buy a home and start building equity and generating and accumulating wealth. Again, you know, these were things that were racially exclusive, not to mention the fact that universities were once very explicitly racially exclusive. Now, all of those things, that those enable families to pass down wealth, intergenerationally. If some folks were afforded certain opportunities that others were not, then it makes sense that those with more opportunities are going to have more wealth to pass down to their children and to their children, so on and so forth, whereas people of color have not generally had those luxuries. And then when we talk about the way our tax system, for instance, works, there's a lot of preferential treatment for wealth and for income that is made from the possession of wealth, investment income, for example. When we talk about capital gains income, for example, we've got Black Americans receiving 13 cents and Latino Americans receiving 8 cents for each dollar of white dividend income. I'm sorry, that was dividend income. With capital gains, Black Americans have 12 cents and Latinos have 10 cents for each dollar of unrealized capital gains in a white family. Now, that in and of itself is evidence of historical advantage for white families over Black and Latino families. And it wasn't just that Black people didn't work as hard or that Latino people didn't work as hard. It was just that historically they had greater opportunities to amass that wealth.
So do you think that as the Latino population increases in this country and as more and more Latinos start voting, because that was one of the biggest voting blocks that didn't show up. I mean, the African-American voting bloc is largely pretty reliable and, you know, shows up fairly regularly, although quite often there's a lot of voter suppression, and we've certainly seen examples of that. But I'm correct, am I not, Marley, in suggesting that in terms of showing up at the polls, African-Americans are very, very loyal voters, if you will.
Well, yeah, of course. And I think that in too large a part, you know, you're right. We're not getting enough people out to the polls. And it's not just that voter mobilization is failing. It's not just that, because it really is an issue of community organizing. And
that's not to say that the Republicans haven't been hostile to this. They shut down Acorn, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they will continue to fight tooth and nail for such an agenda, for an agenda that is, well, essentially the status quo. And, you know, we spoke earlier about this tax deal that got kind of pushed through with little to no room for negotiation towards the end of the year, certainly to the loud opposition of folks all over the country. But, yeah, I mean, they will fight tooth and nail to maintain this status quo, and they won't make it easy. But that highlights all the work that needs to be done in terms of community education, not just getting people out to the polls, but getting folks out there making informed decisions about what's happening.
The reason I bring it up all the time is that I know that your report has been inspired by Martin Luther King, and there's no question that closing the economic divide in this country was a core objective of Dr. Martin Luther King, and particularly in the final years of his life, that's what he was about. So that's why I sort of refer to it often, and it seems to be appropriate. to some extent, I think all the middle class and working Americans are in the same boat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, an austerity agenda is going to perpetuate general inequality in the United States. It's not going to be good for anybody, even for the super wealthy who are making millions off of these tax breaks. Ultimately, it's just not going to be good, even if we are talking about certain, you know, job creators. I mean, if there's not a consumer base because the rest of the country is too poor to go and buy goods and services, it's obviously not going to be good for anybody. And so far, again, especially with this tax deal that got pushed through at the end of the year, we're not doing anything different there. It is the extension of the status quo and the postponement of more pain. You know, this is something, you know, more tax breaks, tax breaks, tax breaks, and service cuts. This is something that's been happening for decades. And I think we should recognize that it's time for a different approach, a different strategy, a bold strategy. We're talking about we need to shift gears. We just need to totally shift gears, because these attacks on government, as I mentioned earlier, like Grover Norquist said, he wanted to shrink government to a size that he could drown it in a bathtub. Government has been shrinking, and opportunity for our most marginalized communities have been shrinking. That's why we're in this great recession. And the only way that we're going to be able to turn it around is to start doing something different. So with this overrepresentation of people of color in the public sector, we should be looking to build that. We should be looking to create more jobs in the public sector that would make the recovery possible and that would additionally lay the foundation for longer-term stability.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles on this Martin Luther King Day, Mazhar Ali.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Mazhar Ali, who is the co-author of State of the Dream 2011, Austerity for Whom?, a new report published by United for a Fair Economy that examines the effects conservative fiscal policies have had upon African Americans, Latinos, and other minority groups that have suffered disproportionately from the economic downturn. We'll take a short break and we'll return in a moment and do an assessment of the Obama foreign policy and national security team.